The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening, and a really warm welcome. It's nice to see you all. Thank you for sharing this practice. It's quite something that we come together and beginning to sit silently. I don't know, I feel touched by it in some way, that there's people who are committed to quieting the heart and mind so that we can show up in the world, show up for our own lives in such a way that it might unfold differently than if we were just busy with what goes on in our hearts and minds. Maybe you've noticed that the mind, the heart, they get into these moods. And part of mindfulness practice is just part of noticing this, what's going on inside. And if we pay attention throughout the day, we notice that sometimes we're thinking about the past, sometimes we're thinking about the future, we're not so much in the present. But we might recognize that our mind are in these grips of these moods sometimes, and these moods can be like clouds, that they are, sometimes they're dark and heavy, or sometimes they're light and fluffy. Sometimes they're really slow moving, and sometimes they're fast moving if there's a really strong breeze. But clouds cover up the deep blue immensity of the sky. They obscure the radiance of the sun. They might cast shadows on the ground. They often bring rain, sleet, and snow, such as today when it's raining. For us, it's all such good news. But we might recognize that these clouds, these moods of the mind, they arise from this, maybe we might say, a dwelling place. And that is, you know, what the mind is dwelling on. And in the case of if it's we find ourselves thinking about the past, we might have this focus on the pleasures when we think about the past, and this focus on, so we're replaying the enjoyment or the nostalgia of all these pleasant or good things that happened in the past. Or maybe we're doing the opposite, right, where there's this focusing on the failures and the mistakes and the missed opportunities. Whichever way it might be, it affects the mood. And then, of course, the mood of the mind affects the way that we're perceiving our experiences. But whether it's about the pleasures or the disappointments, in either way, we're a little bit off balance, not steady, not kind of centered. They're not seeing things as clearly, maybe obscured by the clouds. And sometimes we cling on to what we're trying to hold on to, and get pulled in one direction as we try to hold on to it, and it's slippery, and then we hold on even tighter, and then we're getting a little bit more off balance as we're holding tighter and tighter. And of course, the same thing happens when we think about the future. We might be filled with hopes or high expectations, and there's this uplift. And then we have this desire for success, so we are thinking of all these great things that are going to happen. And then, of course, we might be overcome by negative thoughts and have disappointments, or this fear of disappointment, or a worry about failure, anxiety about losing things. it's quite something, right? To just reflect on all the things that our minds and do during the course of a day. And in all these scenarios, it seems like the kind of the mind goes here and then it goes there. And there isn't a sense of mastery that we can just choose the mind to go here, or nor is there a sense of balance. We're just here, steady. Instead, there's a feeling of maybe, you know, leaning one way or the other. I like Bhikkhu Bodhi very much. He said that the mind is like a drunken driver. He's trying to go down the center, but careening and going, you know, off one way, and then, you know, maybe like almost hit something and then going off another way. It's, and, you know, drunken drivers, of course, cause a lot of damage. And in the same way, you know, our thoughts can do this too. So I'm not saying anything you don't already know. But these expressions of craving or attachment, just what happens when we're, often when we're thinking about the past or we're thinking about the future, this longing for the vanished past or vanished past, or having this high hopes for the future, are both manifestations of not being really present for what's happening here in a balanced way. So what does it mean to be balanced, to be here? We could say that equanimity is this quality that enables the mind to hold this centered position. One Pali word that gets translated as equanimity is tatramajjatata. Means it's like three words squished together into one long word, and standing in the middle. So we can think of as equanimity as the middle way between craving and aversion, between attachment and pushing away. But often when we use this expression middle, sometimes it might feel like a compromise, like, okay, well, we don't get the extremes. Okay, we'll be satisfied in the middle. Or there's something, a middle way can be inspiring, but it also can also feel not so inspiring. And I heard this from Gil quite some time ago. I don't remember when. But what if we think about, instead of the middle way, if we think of it as the third way? So instead of leaning this direction or the other direction, to a third way, something different. So it's not so much that we have this stalwartness that can... even though there's these gale force winds that doesn't move, even though it might have that quality, but that also can have the quality of really stiffness and this sense of stuckness. But if equanimity is not leaning or careening, but it's a third way to show up, that is with some uprightness, some steadiness, some balance. And another word that gets translated as equanimity is upekkha, which we can translate this as seeing, or seeing the bigger picture. So not being so lost in that experience at that moment, but instead to be able to put things into a bigger perspective. I told this story just recently, but... you know, it had such a big impact on me when I was a teenager and having my share of teenage angst. Right, those are, I don't know if it's easy years for anybody, but, you know, I had my share of difficulties. And as it happened with my father's work, that we had an opportunity to go to Europe, and we visited, you know, did touristy things, but there was something about visiting these Roman walls that had been there for so long, over thousand years, I don't know how long now, but it just all of a sudden made my pimples, the drama happening with my friends, such a different perspective to think about, wow, how many people have seen these walls? How many people have, you know, benefited from them, or, you know, at that time, and then the tourists, and even after I'm gone, they'll still be there. So just really that different perspective really caused a shift in my understanding and things that seemed insurmountable and catastrophic. And my teenage mind all of a sudden didn't seem so bad. So part of equanimity is being able to take that different perspective and maybe stand in a different place, a third place, rather than over here where there's this grasping, over here where there's this pushing away. But to be able to stand in the middle, which might be a third place, the third way, this unshakability, this steadiness. And so part of this equanimity allows for this even-minded acceptance of oneself and others. I'm not talking about passivity. I'm talking about recognizing and allowing ourselves and others to really be who they are with respect and care. So instead of, you know, secretly wishing they were different so that, I don't know, for whatever reasons we might have, we don't have any end to the reasons we have why we want things to be different or people to be different. But this even-minded acceptance that grows out of respect, respect for ourselves, respect for others, this even-minded acceptance that comes from this perspective of seeing the bigger picture, instead of this idea that we can grin and bear it or endure it, or if we dig in hard enough or strong enough that things will eventually blow over, so to speak. But equanimity points to a third way, which is instead of sometimes when we have craving or attachment, there's this, we're holding on. We either holding on to wanting to things to be different or holding on to wanting more of the same. But equanimity, this third way, is more this openness of heart, openness of mind that allows us to see things differently and allows us to have this warmth that all of us naturally have inside of us, but to have that to be able to motivate us or inspire us or direct us, make space for this beautiful heart that we all have. So when we are present without aversion or attachment, we don't take sides, we aren't blaming, we aren't filled with doubt, or we aren't trying to get busy with propping ourselves up or defending ourselves, or, you know, trying to make sure that we look good to ourselves and to others. But instead, with equanimity, we have this access to this openness, this spaciousness, this even-minded acceptance that doesn't hold on to an opinion, like, yes, this is right. Like, there's no, that's the opposite movement of this openness and spaciousness. So it allows all the rejecting, the claiming, the panic, the defense, the worrying, the doubt, allows all that to empty out in some kind of way, to drain away in some kind of way. So equanimity, it's the 10th parami. Parami is this word that we often translate as perfection. These are 10 qualities that we can cultivate in our daily life and on the cushion. It's also the 7th factor awakening and the 4th Brahma-Vihara, but what I want to point to is that it's the 10th in this, you know, string of 10, and often, I would say actually always, when these lists, we have these lists, the Buddhist love lists. I'm a big fan of the lists myself. I know not everybody is. That's perfectly fine, of course. But the 10th on this long list means that I'm describing this, but right, it's not so easy. It's part of this practice. And all these other qualities, that the other 9 that come before equanimity, is a way that to help support, help create the conditions to give rise to equanimity. I'll just name these other 9. I'm not going to go through them here, but so all the paramis are generosity, ethical behavior, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truth, resolve, loving kindness, and equanimity. So you can see that the number 9 is loving kindness. It's this heart quality, maybe this part of opening or allowing this warmth of our hearts to get expressed and to show up in this particular way. And there's a verse that I'd like to share that's from the Theragata, and that is the verse of the monastics. There was a tradition of when they had this awakening experience to have a verse. And you might have heard of the Theragata, in which there's the nuns, and this is the Theragata, which are the monks. So there's these two collections. And this is the very first verse in the collection from the monks. And the monk's name, who says this, is Subhuti. So here is Subhuti's awakening poem. My little hut is roofed and pleasant, sheltered from the wind. So rain, sky, if you wish. My mind is serene and freed. I practice wholeheartedly. So rain, sky, if you wish. There's something I find very tender in the simplicity of this. My little hut is roofed and pleasant. We can take this literally. Maybe he has a nice place to stay. But often we see that the one's body or one's self is kind of like a hut, is a place in which there's an abiding. Maybe we'll say that. So the paramis are ways in which we can build shelters for ourselves. These are the qualities. In this list of 10 is not mindfulness, but of course mindfulness is one too. And in a moment, I'll talk about some other ways in which we might develop these. But this idea that have this feeling to be sheltered from the wind, like, or rain, sky, if you wish, that whatever happens, it'll be okay. To have this sense of confidence, to have this sense of steadiness, which comes from this sense of openness, this even-mindedness. So rain, sky, as you please. Or maybe we could, I'm putting the emphasis on sky, but maybe we could also read the poem as, so rain, sky, as you please. Like whatever the rain has to bring, whatever the sky has to bring, clouds, like I was talking about earlier, or not. Sense that it's okay, because my mind is serene and freed. I practice wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly. What is it like to give oneself over to the practice? Instead of, okay, is this something that I'll do to fix or help me through this rough spot, but then I'll put it aside while I go to my job or I'm with my family members or working with some difficulties. But what is it like to bring our practice in some form to everything we do? So there are many avenues to nourish and support equanimity. And maybe I'll mention a few that are, once I say them, you'll recognize, oh yeah, of course, but these aren't on the traditional lists. Some things that might already be part of your life. Here's one. Just showing up repeatedly. Right? We all have this experience that if we come to IMC regularly or watch on YouTube, like maybe sometimes it's fantastic and you feel inspired and like, oh, that just made such a difference, right? It felt like they were speaking to just what I was working with. Or sometimes it feels like a dud. Feels like, maybe the teacher wasn't quite right. Maybe you just weren't in that space or whatever. And then a third time you come and it's a third way. Or maybe then a fourth time you fell asleep and then this is, again, it's exciting and like, oh yeah, it was so great. But the more times you come, the more the different experiences you have, then you start to realize, oh yeah, the Dharma talks at IMC are not inherently any one particular way. They're just lots of different ways. Of course they are. And then we start to notice, oh yeah, is anything inherently one particular way? Sometimes I feel this way, sometimes I feel that way. So just this idea of just recognize what we already do is that we don't have the same exact experience, even though we may be repeating the environment we're in or the conditions we're setting up or something like this. It's always a little bit different. And so this helps kind of cultivate equanimity, like, oh yeah, one time it was terrible, but one time it was great. So I'm just going to go because this is my practice. And this idea that it can be a support to let go of it having to be a particular way. And maybe like this, seeing the bigger picture, stepping back and saying, oh yeah, sometimes it's okay and sometimes it's not okay. And that's okay. Not insisting that it be one particular way. So whatever that might be, whether it's, of course, right, coming to IMC or YouTube or whatever, you know, whatever we're doing. So this is one, just to maybe reflect on these things that we do repeatedly. I was going to say, is brushing our teeth exactly the same every time? No, maybe sometimes there's a little more toothpaste or sometimes we're daydreaming or, you know, it's a little, you know, right? Even these things that we do so regularly. But it's, we kind of just loosen the grip of thinking that it's one way. As we pay attention to our lives, we realize nothing's really just one way. Something else that can really be a support for equanimity is not necessarily on the meditation cushion, maybe, but not necessarily, is to remind ourselves of what we already know. Things change. It's not a secret. We all know this. But sometimes we get lost into thinking that it's going to be like this forever. And maybe things don't change in precisely the way we want them to change or at the schedule we want them to change. But this idea of inconstancy can be a tremendous support for when we're having some difficulty, but also just to remain even-minded, just to remain balanced. To have this third way is to not get so completely tangled up in what's happening. Instead, to recognize, okay, this is how it's showing up now, and to not deaden ourselves to it or not disengage, but to still be really connected. Like, what's happening here? But in an open-handed way, in an open-hearted way that allows us to see the changing nature of rising and passing away and feel the changing nature and just to notice that's its nature, to change. So to just remind ourselves about the inconstancy and changing nature of things can help with equanimity. And also, I give this little story about going to seeing these Roman ruins, which really did, you know, all these years later, it's been a while since I've been a teenager, right? That I still remember that, sometimes bring it to mind. So to bring some vastness, some idea of physical space, we can think about the universe, the stars, the, you know, it's a little bit mind-blowing to think about how big the universe is, or to think in terms of time, you know, how long humans have been here, or even for ourselves, like if we, to put our mind moments into just in our lives so far, how many different mind moments have we had? How many different experiences have we had? So to just touch into kind of like the vastness of whether it's space or time or a number of experiences that we've had is another way that can shift our perspective and allow us maybe to occupy this third way of equanimity, of seeing the big picture, having some steadfastness and steadiness. But with, again, maybe I should say, without this aloofness, right? This is an open-heartedness. So it's not a disconnection. It's a staying connected, but an open-handed, open-hearted way. Something else that can really support equanimity is the building of happiness inside. What are the things that make us feel happy? To have experiences or inside that don't depend on the outside conditions being just right. An example is just being kind. We usually feel good when we're kind to other people, or even bringing to mind memories of when we have been kind. Being generous. Whether, you know, there's so many different ways we can be generous. So whether it's with resources or giving people the benefit of the doubt or however else that might show up, or loving kindness, extending metta, radiating metta, or wishing the best, wishing goodwill for others. It's another way in which we might cultivate equanimity. So these are things that chances are we're doing already, but to think about, to put them as a support for equanimity, to help us to like occupy this third way, this middle way, tetra majja tata, standing in the middle. But to consider these things that we're already doing, like, okay, yeah, this is a support for equanimity. This is I'm cultivating this equanimity, this steadfastness, this steadiness, this balance that's open-hearted, open-handed, to consider that it's cultivating it or developing it or strengthening it. Actually, that itself helps cultivate and strengthen it, as opposed to, oh, okay, I'm just doing this because this is what I'm doing. But part of the parami practice is just to recognize that these things that we might already be doing, they can be a tremendous support for greater freedom for ourselves and the way that we show up in the world. So as part of this aspiration or this movement towards greater and greater freedom for these paramis, so to have equanimity be part of this movement towards greater freedom and these simple acts of kindness that we do, they're fantastic. And maybe just note, oh yeah, notice how we feel a little bit more balanced when we do that. And just to make that little note can link it also to the freedom, which makes it a parami, one of these perfections. So, equanimity. The word in English sounds kind of clunky. And to be sure, tatra majja tata, I just like to say that word, but it's kind of clunky too. But it's a beautiful quality. And I'd like to say it's a heart quality, not only a head quality, in which we can show up maybe in a third way, without grabbing, clinging, attachment, and without aversion or pushing away, but in the middle, steady, balanced. So may we all find our way with some steadiness and balance, and the way that we are may be a support for others who are around us, so that our practice can be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Thank you. I think I'll end there. And if you'd like to come up and ask me a question, you're welcome to do that. Or otherwise, I wish you all a wonderful rainy evening. I'm so happy it's raining. So, thank you.